Chapter 3. The nightmare always began the same way. It was 2 years ago, and he was 7 years of age, one of nearly 200 would-be aspirants who had come to the fortress monastery at Alderuk, seeking to be accepted as knight's supplicant by the order. From whatever pleasant fantasy was drifting around inside his skull, the darkness would always come to wrench him back to his first day with the order. It had been midwinter, the only time of year at which the order recruited, and hundreds of children would arrive at the fortress desperately hoping they would be among the handful chosen to start on the pathway to becoming a knight. The rite of selection was the same for every one of them. The guards manning the gates would tell the waiting aspirants there was only one way to be accepted for training within the order. They must survive a single night beyond the gates of the fortress until dawn the next morning. During that time, they had to remain standing in the same spot. They could not eat, or sleep, or sit down, or take rest in any way. What was more, they were told they each had to surrender their coat and boots. It had been snowing the day Zahariel took the test, and the snow lying in wide drifts against the walls of the fortress and upon the branches of the trees at the forest's edge gave the scene a curiously festive appearance. Nemiel had been beside him. The two of them had each decided they would become knights, assuming they managed to pass the test and were found to be worthy. The snow was thick on the ground by the time the test started, and throughout the day the snowfall continued until it had risen as high as their knees. Though the forest was several hundred metres from the walls of the fortress, the darkness beyond the tree line seemed to reach out from the haunted depths like a living thing, enveloping them in its silky embrace like an unwelcome lover. As he dreamed, Zahariel turned in his sleep, the phantasmal cold making him shiver in his cot bed. He recognised the dream for what it was, but such knowledge did not allow him to break from its inevitable course. His extremities had grown so numb he felt sure he would lose his fingers and toes to frostbite, and knew that in the morning after the darkness he would wake and check to make sure his nightmare had not translated into the real world. Throughout the test, the guards had done everything in their power to make the ordeal more difficult. They had wandered among the ranks of miserable barefoot children, alternating between cruelty and kindness in their attempts to break them. One guard had called Nemiel a pus-brained simpleton for even thinking he was worthy to join the order. Another had tried to tempt Zahariel by offering a blanket and a hot meal, but only if he would first give up on his ambitions and leave the test. Once again, Zahariel could see the guard's face leering down at him as he said, "Come inside, boy. There's no reason for you to be standing out here freezing. It's not as if you'd ever make it into the order. Everybody knows you haven't got what it takes. You know it too. I can see right through you. Come inside. You don't want to be outside once night comes. Raptors, bears and lions. There's a lot of different predators come around the walls of the fortress at night. And there's nothing they like more than to see a boy standing in open ground. You'd make a tasty morsel for the likes of them." So far, the nightmare had followed a familiar course, treading the paths of memory. But at some point, never the same one twice, it would deviate into madness, and things of which he had no memory, things he wished he could erase from his mind as easily as his pleasant dreams, were wont to vanish. In this variation, Zahariel stood beside a fair-haired boy he had never seen before, in his nightmares or in reality. The boy was a youth of wondrous perfection and pride, who stood with ramrod-straight shoulders and the bearing of someone who would grow into the mightiest of warriors. A guard with a gnarled face and cruel orange eyes leant towards the boy.
"You don't need to finish the test," said the guard. "Your pride and fortitude under pressure has attracted the attention of the Order's Grand Master. Your fate has already been decided. Any fool with eyes can see you've got what it takes to be the chosen one."
Zahariel wanted to cry out, to tell the boy not to believe the falsehoods he was hearing. But it was what the boy wanted to hear. It promised him everything he had ever desired. The boy's face lit up at the news of his acceptance, his eyes shining with the promise of achieving all that he had ever wanted. Thinking the test was over, the boy sank exhausted to his knees and leaned forward to kiss the snow-covered ground. The cruel laughter of the guards brought the boy's head up with a start, and Zahariel could see the dawning comprehension of his foolishness slide across his face like a slick.
"Foolish boy," cried the guard. "You think because someone tells you that you're special that it must be true. You are nothing but a pawn for our amusement."
The boy let out a heart-rending howl of anguish, and Zahariel fought to keep his eyes fixed straight ahead as the boy was dragged to the edge of the forest, red-eyed and crying, his face pale with shock and disbelief. The boy's cries were muffled as he was hurled into the dark forest, the tangled webs of roots and creepers dragging him deeper and deeper into the choking vegetation. Though the boy's pained cries grew weaker and weaker, Zahariel could still hear them, echoing in unimaginable anguish long after he'd been taken by the darkness. Zahariel tried to shut out the boy's pain as the weather grew colder and the number of aspirants standing outside Alderuk dwindled, as other boys decided it was better to bear the stigma of failure than to face the ordeal for a moment longer. Some went pleading to the guards, begging for shelter within the fortress and the return of their coats and boots. Others simply collapsed, worn down by cold and hunger, to be carried away to fates unknown. By sunset, only 2/3 of the boys remained. Then, as darkness fell, the guards retreated to their sentry points inside the fortress, leaving the boys to endure the long hours of the night, alone. The night was the worst time. Zahariel twisted as his dream self shivered in the dismal darkness, his teeth chattering so violently he thought they might shatter. The silence was absolute. The boys' cries from the forest stilled, and the guards' jibes and taunts ended. With the coming of night, the silence and the power of imagination did a better job of terrorizing the boys than the guards ever could. The seeds of fear had been sown with talk of predators prowling around outside the fortress, and in the still of the night, those seeds took root and sprouted in each boy's mind. The night had a quality that was eternal, thought Zahariel. It had always existed and always would exist. The feeble efforts of men to bring illumination to the galaxy were futile and doomed to failure. He dimly perceived the strangeness of the concept as it formed in his mind, expressing ideas and words that he had no knowledge of, but which he knew were crushingly true. Afterwards, it was the sounds that Zahariel feared the most. The ordinary sounds of the forest at night, noises that he had heard more than 1,000 times in the past, were louder and more threatening than any sounds he had heard before. At times, he heard sounds he swore were the work of raptors, bears, or even the much-feared Calavanite lion. The crack of every twig, every rustle of the leaves, every call and scream of the night, all these things sounded heavy with menace. Death lurked just behind him or at his elbow, and he wanted to run, to give up the ordeal. He wanted to go back to the settlement where he was born, to his friends and family, to his mother's soothing words, to the warm place by the hearth. He wanted to give up on the order. He wanted to forego his knightly pretensions. He was 7 years of age, and he wanted to go home. As horrible and unearthly as the noises had been, it was the voices that were the worst part of the ordeal, the most loathsome invention of his nightmare. Between the roars and the snap of branches, a million susurrations emerged from the forest, like a cabal of whispering voices. Whether anyone else could hear them, Zahariel did not know, for no one else reacted to the sounds that invaded his skull with promises of power, of flesh, of immortality. All could be his if he would step from the snow-covered esplanade before the fortress and walk into the forest. Without the presence of the guards, Zahariel felt able to turn his head and look towards the tangled, vine-choked edge of the trees. Though forests carpeted much of the surface of Caliban, and his entire existence had been spent within sight of tall trees and swaying green canopies, this forest was unlike anything he'd seen before. The trunks of the trees were leprous and green, their bark rotten and diseased. Darkness that was blacker than the deepest night lurked between them, and though the voices promised him that all would be well if he stepped into the forest, he knew that terrors undreamt of and nightmares beyond reckoning dwelt beneath its haunted arbors. As ridiculous as it seemed to Zahariel, he knew that this dream-shaped forest was no natural phenomenon, a region so unnatural that it existed beyond the mortal world, shaped by its dreams and nightmares, stirred by its desires and fears. What lurked within its depths was beyond fear and reason, madness and elemental power that seethed and roared in concert with the heaving tides of men and their dreadful lives. And yet, for all its dark, twisting, horrid power, there was an undeniable attraction. Power, no matter its source, could always be mastered, couldn't it? Elemental energies could be harnessed and made to serve the will of one with the strength of purpose to master its complexities. The things that could be achieved with such power were limitless. The great beasts could be hunted to extinction, and the other knightly brotherhoods brought to heel. All of Caliban would become the domain of the Order, and all would obey its masters or die by the swords of its terrible black angels of death. The thought made him smile as he thought of the glories to be won on the fields of battle. He pictured the slaughter and the debaucheries that would follow, the carrion birds and worms feasting, and the capering madmen that made merry in the ruin of a world. Zahariel cried out, the vision faded from his mind, and he heard the voices for what they were, the whisper in the gloom, the hinting tone, the haunting laugh, and the jealous vipers that cracked the panels of tombs and composed the platitudes of his epitaph. Even unmasked, the tempters of the dark realm of the wood would not leave him, and their blandishments continued to plague him throughout the night until his feet were ready to carry him to willing damnation in the darkness. In the end, as it always was, it was Nemiel that stopped him, not through any word or deed, but purely because he was there. Nemiel stood at his shoulder throughout the nightmare, as he had on that cold, fearful night. Unbending and unbroken, his best friend stood by his side, never wavering and never afraid. Taking heart from his cousin's example, Zahariel found new strength fill him, and knew that but for the strength of his brotherhood with Nemiel, he would have faltered in his inner struggle. With the strength he drew from his presence, he refused to bow down to his fears. He refused to give in. He had seen out the night with Nemiel beside him. As the relentless logic of the nightmare gave way to memory, the sun rose over the treetops of the forest, and the dark whisperers withdrew. Only a dozen boys remained standing before the gates of Alderuk, and Zahariel relaxed in his bed as the familiar pattern of reality reasserted itself. Many of the other hopefuls had failed the test during the night and had gone to the gates to beg the guards to let them in. Whether any had heard the same voices as he had and ventured into the forest, he never knew. And as the first rays of sunlight reached their freezing bodies, Zahariel saw a gruff, solidly built figure emerge from the fortress and march towards them. The figure had worn a hooded white surplice over burnished black armour and carried a gnarled wooden staff at his side. "I am Master Ramiel," the figure had said, standing before the aspirants. He had pulled back the hood of his surplice, revealing the weathered face of a man well into his middle 50s. "It is my honour to be one of the Order's Masters of Instruction." He raised the staff and swung it in a wide arc, indicating the dozen shivering boys before him. "You will be my students. You have passed the test set for you, and that is good. But you should know it was more than just a test. It was also your first lesson. In a minute we will go inside Alderuk, where you will be given a hot meal and warm, dry clothes. Before we do, I want you to consider something for a moment. You have stood in the snow outside the fortress for more than 20 hours. You have endured cold, hunger, and hardship, not to mention other privations. Yet you are still here. You passed the test, and you endured these things where others failed. The question I would ask you is simple. Why? There were almost 200 boys here. Why did you 12 pass this test, and not the others? Master Ramiel had looked from one boy to another, waiting to see if any of them would answer the question. At length, once he had seen that none of the boys would, he had answered it for them. "It is because your minds were stronger," Master Ramiel had told them. "A man can be trained in the skills of killing. He can learn to use a knife or other weapons. But these things are nothing if his mind is not strong. It takes strength of mind for a man to hunt the great beasts. It takes strength for a man to know cold and hunger, to feel fear and yet refuse to break in the face of it. Always remember, the mind and will of a knight
are as much weapons in his armoury as his sword and pistol. I will teach you how to develop these things, but it is up to you whether these lessons take root. Ultimately, the question of whether you will succeed or fail will be decided in the recesses of your own hearts. It takes mental strength and great fortitude of mind and will to become a knight. There, you have heard your first lesson, Master Ramiel had said grimly, his eyes sweeping sternly over his new charges as though he was capable of seeing into their very souls. Now, go and eat. The command given, Zahariel's mind floated up from the depths of his subconscious towards waking as he heard a distant bell ringing and felt rough hands shaking him awake. His eyes flickered open, gummed by sleep, his vision blurred. A face swam into focus above him, and it took a moment for him to recognize his cousin from the callow youth he had stood next to in his dream.
Nemiel?
He asked, with a sleep-drowsy voice.
Who else would it be?
What are you doing? What time is it?
It's early, said Nemiel. Get up, quickly, now.
Why? Protested Zahariel. What's going on? Nemiel sighed, and Zahariel looked around their austere barracks as supplicants dressed hurriedly with grins of excitement and not a little fear upon their faces.
What's going on?
Parroted Nemiel.
We're going on a hunt, is what's going on.
A hunt?
Aye, cried Nemiel. Brother Amardis is leading our phratry on a hunt.
Zahariel felt the familiar mix of excitement and fear as he rode the black steed between the trees in the shadowy depths of the forest. He shivered as fragments of his dream returned to him, and he strained to hear any hint of the screaming or whispering that had dogged his latest episode of dreaming. There was nothing, but then the excited jabbering of his comrades would have blotted out all but the most strident calls from the forest. Zahariel rode alongside Nemiel, his cousin's open face and dark hair partially concealed by his helmet, but his excitement infectious. Zahariel had been selected to lead this group, and nine supplicants rode behind him, each one also mounted on one of the black horses of Caliban. The root strands of any other colour of riding beast had long since died out, and only horses of a dark hue could be bred by the order's horse masters. Like their riders, each horse was young and had much to learn, on their way to becoming the famed mounts of the Ravenwing Cavalry. The knights of the Ravenwing rode like daring heroes of old, leading exponents of lightning warfare and hit-and-run charges. They were masters of the wilderness. They could survive for months alone in the deadly forests of Caliban, heroic figures in matte black armour and winged helms that concealed the identity of each warrior. To be one of the Ravenwing was to live a lonely life, but one of heart-stopping adventure and glory. Five other groups of 10 riders made up the hunt, spread throughout the forest in a staggered V formation, with Brother Amardis roaming between them as an observer and mentor. They were many kilometres from the Order's Fortress Monastery, and the thrill of riding through the forest so far from home almost outweighed the cold lump of dread that had settled in Zahariel's stomach.
"You think we'll actually find a beast?"
asked Atias from Zahariel's right.
"I mean, this part of the forest is supposed to be clear, isn't it?" "We won't find anything with you prattling on," snapped Nemiel. "I swear they can hear you back at Alderook."
Atias flinched at Nemiel's harsh tone, and Zahariel shot his cousin a curt glance. Nemiel shrugged, unapologetic, and rode onwards.
"Pay no attention to him, Atias," said Zahariel. "He's missing his bed, that's all."
Atias nodded and smiled, his natural optimism glossing over the incident with good grace. The boy was younger than Zahariel, and he had known him ever since Atias was 7 and had joined the Order. Zahariel wasn't sure why he had taken the younger boy under his wing, but he had helped Atias adapt to the disciplined and demanding life of a supplicant, perhaps because he had seen something of himself in the boy. His early years with the Order had been hard, and if it hadn't been for Zahariel's guidance, Atias would undoubtedly have failed in his first weeks and been sent home in ignominy. As it was, the boy had persevered and become a more than credible supplicant. Nemiel had never warmed to the boy and made him the frequent subject of his often cruel jibes and scornful ridicule. It had become an unspoken source of antagonism between the cousins, for Nemiel had held that each supplicant should stand or fall by his own merits, not by who helped him, where Zahariel contended that it was the duty of each and every supplicant to help his brothers.
"It's a great honour for Brother Amadis to lead us on this hunt, isn't it?
Indeed it is, Attias, said Zahariel. It's not often we get to learn from such a senior knight. If he speaks, you must listen to what he says.
I will,
promised Attias. Another of their group rode alongside Zahariel and pushed up the visor of his helm to speak. The helmets the supplicants wore were the hand-me-downs of the order, and only those issued to team leaders boasted an intersuit communication system. Zahariel's helmet allowed him to communicate with the leaders of the other groups of riders and Brother Amadis, but his fellow supplicants had to open their helmets to be heard. The rider next to him was Eliath, a friend of Nemiel and companion in his mocking games. Eliath was taller and broader than any of the other supplicants, his bulk barely able to fit within a suit of armour. Though his flesh was youthfully doughy, his strength was prodigious, and his stamina enormous. Though what he possessed in power, he lacked in speed. Eliath and Zahariel had never seen eye to eye, the boy too often taking Nemiel's lead when shaping his behaviour towards his fellow supplicants.
"Did you bring your notebook with you, Attias?"
asked Eliath.
"Yes," said Attias. "It's in my pack. Why? Well, if we do find a beast, you'll want to take notes on how to gut it. They might stand you in good stead if you ever face one without us."
A tightening of the jawline was the only outward sign of Attias's displeasure, but Zahariel knew it was a jibe that was somewhat deserved. The younger boy would carry his notebooks with him at all times and write down every word the senior knights and supplicants said, whether appropriate or not. The footlocker at the end of Attias's bed was filled with dozens of such notebooks, crammed with his tight script, and every night before lights out he would memorise entire tracts of offhand comments and remarks as though they were passages from the verbatim.
"Maybe I'll write your epitaph," said Attias. "If we do meet a beast, it's sure to go for the fattest one first."
"I'm not fat," protested Eliath. "I'm just big-boned."
"Enough, the pair of you," said Zahariel, though he took pleasure in seeing Attias sticking up for himself and Eliath taken down a peg. "We're training for a hunt, and I'm sure Brother Amadis doesn't consider baiting each other as part of that training."
"True enough, Zahariel," said a sanguine voice in his helmet, "but it does no harm to foster a little rivalry within a group."
None of the other supplicants heard the voice, but Zahariel smiled at the sound of Brother Amadis's voice, knowing he must have heard the exchange between the supplicants.
"Healthy rivalry drives us to excel in all things, but it cannot be allowed to get out of hand," continued Amadis. "You handled that well, Zahariel. Allow rivalry to exist, but prevent it from becoming destructive."
Over the closed communications, Zahariel said,
"Thank you, brother."
"No thanks are necessary. Now take the lead and assume scouting discipline."
He smiled, feeling a warm glow envelop him at his hero's praise. To think that a warrior as great as Amadis knew his name was an honour, and he spurred his mount onwards as he felt the responsibility of his command settle upon him.
"Close up,"
he ordered, riding to the front of the group of supplicants and taking his place at the point of their arrow formation.
"Scouting discipline from now on. Consider this enemy territory."
His voice carried the strength of conviction that came from the approval of his peers, and without a murmur of dissent, his squadmates smoothly moved into position. Nemiel took up position behind him and to the left, while a supplicant named Pallian assumed the same position on the opposite side. Eliath and Attias took up position on either side of the formation, and Zahariel turned in the saddle to make sure his squad was lined up in position. Satisfied that all was as it should be, he returned his attention to the terrain ahead, the thick trunks and heavy foliage rendering the forest a canvas of shadows and slanted spars of light. Leaf mould covered the ground, and the smell of decaying matter in the darkness gave the air a musty scent that was reminiscent of spoiled meat. The ground was rocky, but the horses of the Ravenwing picked a clear path between the boulders and fallen tree trunks. Strange noises drifted between the trees, but Zahariel had grown up in the forest, and he let the rhythm of the undergrowth drift over him, sorting the various calls of the wildlife of Caliban into those that were dangerous and those that were not. Most of the great beasts had been hunted to extinction by the Lion's Great Crusade, but several enclaves of lethal predators still existed, though they were far from any such places. Less dangerous monsters still lurked, unseen and unknown, in almost every part of the world's forests, but such creatures rarely attacked groups of warriors, relying on stealth and surprise to attack lone victims as they moved between the safe havens of the walled cities. Amid the hooting, cawing cries of birds, Zahariel could hear the clicking, creaking noise of the forest, the wind through the high trees, and the crunch of hooves over broken branches. Moving silently through the forest was virtually impossible for any but the Ravenwing, but still Zahariel wished they could be riding in silence. Even though the worst of Caliban's predators were mostly dead, there was no such thing as a beast that could be easily overcome, even with such numbers. They rode on for what seemed like a few hours, though without any sign of the sun above, it was difficult to judge the passage of time. Only the changing angles of the beams of light that penetrated the forest canopy gave any hint to how long they'd been travelling. Zahariel longed to communicate with the other groups of riders, but did not want to appear nervous or unsure of the course he was leading. This was supposed to be training for them going on a hunt of their own one day, and the idea that he did not know where he was going was not one he wanted to cultivate. The paths through the forest were well worn through countless training exercises, but so many existed that it was next to impossible to know which ones led to their destination. He and Nemiel had consulted the map before setting out, and their route had seemed simple enough in the walled confines of the fortress monastery. Out in the forest, however, it was quite a different proposition. He was fairly sure he knew where he was and where their path should lead them, but it would be impossible to know if they'd succeeded until they arrived. Zahariel hoped that Brother Amardis was nearby and would take note of how he was leading his fellows. His thoughts were interrupted as they rode beneath low-hanging branches into a shadowed clearing, the sound of the leaves brushing against his helmet startlingly loud in the silence of the forest. Even as the thought struck him that the forest was silent, it was already too late. Something dark and winged dropped from the trees, its body scaled and reptilian. Claws like swords flashed, and one of his squad was dead, both he and his mount shorn in two by the ferocity of the blow. Blood sprayed, and horrified cries echoed from the clearing. Zahariel drew his pistol as the beast struck again. Another supplicant died, his armour torn open and his innards hooked from his belly. The horses were screaming, the scent of blood maddening them, and the supplicants fought to control their crazed mounts. Cries of horror and anger resounded, but there was no sense to them. Zahariel turned his mount towards the beast. Its large body was easily the size of one of their horses, undulating as though a million serpents writhed beneath its glistening flesh. Its spiny head snapped and bit at the end of a long, snake-like neck, its jaws, long and narrow, filled with razored fangs like the teeth of a woodsman's saw. Its wings were filmy and translucent, edged in ridges of horny carapace and ending in long, barbed claws. Zahariel had never seen its like before, and his momentary horror at its awful appearance almost cost him his life. The beast's wings slashed as though it were about to take flight, and one of the barbed hooks scored a deep groove across his breastplate, pitching him from the back of his screaming horse. Zahariel hit the ground hard as he heard another anguished scream of agony. He struggled to rise, his movements awkward in his armour. He reached for his fallen pistol as a wide shadow engulfed him, and he twisted his head as the screeching reptilian bird towered above him, its jaws wide and ready to snap him in two.